the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Welcome, everybody, on today's episode of Lifetime Planning. I'm going to kind of expand on the topic that I had touched upon last month when it came to succession planning and exit planning for business owners. Last month, I spoke a little bit about employee stock ownership plans with Mike Webb from Business Transition Advisors. And this month, Crystal Colbert and I are going to be talking a little bit about business succession planning and what buy-sell agreements actually play into and how we wind up using life insurance for those. So, Crystal, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Perfect. Yes. So I think one of the most important things to start out with is what exactly is succession planning?
Sure. So when you wind up looking at succession planning, just to touch on that a little bit again, it's not really just like the shares of ownership and how those wind up transferring, but it's a bigger process for a business owner. So when you wind up looking at identifying and developing successors to the key positions that are in the firm, the leadership, and of course, the ownership interests, and how all of that is a smooth transition when the owners do one of three basic things. Either they retire, they leave the company, or they wind up passing away.
Right. And why is it so important for somebody to have a succession plan in place?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, it's going to minimize disruption to the company itself. Because, I mean, if you wind up, you know, whether it's the retiring on your own fruition, or if it winds up being like an untimely exit because there's a death of an owner, there's going to be some disruption already. And so this helps maintain a little bit of stability and, you know, continue their operations. There's no setbacks. And there might be that funding that kind of keeps things afloat. So it's, you know, altogether too important. Not to mention the fact that, I guess, if you are doing the appropriate succession planning, putting these things in place, that it does give the family of the business owner the confidence that they're going to get the value out of the business in case there is an untimely death. So, you know, this is probably the business owner, you know, most often than not, it's their biggest asset and they're putting all of their time and effort into that asset. And you want to make sure that, you know, the family's going to be taken care of if something does actually happen to you.
Right. And I think it honestly works both ways, just because it's a benefit to the business itself and the family, because, you know, a lot of the times everything is left to the spouse, right? But the spouse might not have a lot of key insight to the business operations. So you wouldn't want the spouse taking over as a new business owner. So to have that succession plan in place, especially for the business, is very important as well. So I completely agree. So what role does a buy-sell agreement play in the succession planning process?
So the buy-sell agreement is that document that you may or may not know that you wind up having it in place, or maybe you don't have it in place. Maybe it's just kind of something in your articles of incorporation, right? And you think you have it, but it's not really clearly laid out. But what it does do is it provides clear, structured framework for that smooth transfer of ownership of the business if there is some sort of triggering event, right? And so those triggering events are, you know, retirement, is it death, is it disability, or is it just a departure of an owner, right? And so in one of those triggering events, what happens at that point in time? So obviously there's going to be some sort of ownership transfer, right? So it's going to define that process of transferring the ownership interest to the remaining owners, the family, or any sort of like other outside parties, right? So does establish, the, you know, probably one of the biggest questions is, okay, how do we do that? But okay, what's the fair valuation for this business? And I guess that's something that you kind of have to keep in mind. The fair valuation may be different when you start the business versus, you know, 10 years down the line, right? And so you kind of have to think of, you know, initially that fair valuation method that you might agree with when you start the business might be good that day, but, you know, and I guess you just kind of have to keep up with that. And that's going to prevent those conflicts and those disputes for the fair value from the business buyers and sellers. Because if you think about it, the seller wants to actually make it the highest number and the buyer wants to make it the lowest number, right? So obviously conflicting. So having something in writing as to how you're going to come up with that number is going to make all kinds of sense. So that obviously is going to protect both parties, right? It's going to outline the rights and the obligations for both parties once one of those interests does happen. You know, remaining family is protected in some sort of fashion. They're going to receive that fair value. The business maintains the loss of stability if there isn't a loss of an owner. And, you know, I guess, you know, even if it's not going to be in a death or disability kind of situation, when someone retires, I've seen this before where they do want to retire and they haven't really kept up with that buy-sell agreement and they haven't had those conversations. So it winds up being you're at odds with the remaining owners on how exactly you're going to transition out of that business. And there's no thought or foresight into how we wind up funding that kind of a thing. So I guess the last point here would wind up being that it prevents any sort of like outside of interference as well, because if you are a viable company that would have interest from outside parties, you know, usually written into that buy-sell agreement is some sort of a clause that says the remaining ownership group does have the right of first refusal and they can block any sort of interest of outside competitors or ownership from coming in. So it makes a whole lot of sense.
Absolutely. And I feel like a lot of the times they'll look into putting together the buy-sell agreement, but then they don't know their options for funding it or it's not properly funded. So what are the options when it comes to funding a buy-sell agreement?
You're 100% right. I mean, I think a lot of times an owner will come into that and say, yeah, I do have a buy-sell agreement. And then you ask the question of, well, how is it funded? And they have no idea what that question actually, you know, the answer to that might be. So think through your options, right? So if something does happen, one of those triggering events that comes up in a buy-sell agreement, what are the options? You know, do I have cash or personal savings on hand to go ahead and come up with the money that's needed for that liability that comes up, right? So if I have that, I mean, there's going to be some significant liquidity on my end to be able to come up with the cash to be able to fund that, right? Or, I mean, if I don't have all that cash, us as a business, have we come up with a, you know, do we have the cash flow to come up with some sort of a sinking fund to kind of do that over time? So, you know, have we been putting away money? Have we been putting aside money from business cash flow to accumulate funds? And that's going to be, maybe it's a strain on cash flow there. So maybe we don't necessarily have those funds, but that of course is going to be dollar for dollar out your pocket to be able to come up with the money. You know, I guess, do you wind up having some sort of installment payments or is it, you know, seller financing? So if you are leaving the business, you know, are, or, you know, is the family able to come up with some sort of an agreement with the firm or the company to take on the liability of those payments, you know, over time? So if you think about, you know, making regular payments from business cash flow, or if it's from you as an individual to do that kind of a thing, you know, the seller is going to have to accept those payments over a period of time. That's going to involve some interest payments. And so those interest payments, those are going to catch up to you too. And I don't know if you've heard, but interest rates have gone up lately. So unless you're a really nice person and want to do that for free, you know, it's going to take some risk on you as the seller to make sure that, you know, you think that the business is going to be a viable business going forward for however long you have those payments coming to you. So I figure, I mean, if it's like 6% over 7 years, that might cost the buyer 22% or more, depending on how frequent they wind up making those payments. So that's going to add up. You know, then there's bank financing. And bank financing, if it's, I guess if it's on your own fruition and, you know, you're leaving the company, but, you know, think from a bank's perspective, credit's getting a little bit tighter. And if you wind up losing one of the main key leaders of a business, are they going to be jumping at the chance to give your company a loan for that person leaving or if they had just passed away, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to be a little bit difficult. The other thing that, you know, many times is the solution here would be wind up some sort of life insurance. Now, life insurance, it does provide that, and it might be pennies on the dollar because you're just paying premiums for whatever that death benefit is. And it does provide immediate funding on the death of the insured so that it helps with that funding of the agreement to purchase the owner's interest, right? So it's kind of that immediacy, and it may not be like the dollar for dollar or even cost you more than the dollars that you have to lay out for it because you're just paying the premium payments for whatever that life insurance policy is.
Exactly. And so when it comes to using life insurance, what are the typical structures used in a buy-sell agreement?
So I guess there's a couple of different ways that you can do that. And I mean, different variations of this, but I'm going to give you the two basic forms of how buy-sell agreements are structured, right? So the first one is a cross-purchase agreement. And that's kind of the simplest version. And typically you would wind up doing that with maybe two owners, right? So two owners, let's just say it's Aaron and Crystal Financial Planning, right? Mm-hmm. And so the two of us are 50-50 owners. And we figure out that here's a set upon a, like agreed valuation on this. We put the buy-sell agreement in place. So I own a policy on you and you own a policy on me, right? And for the sake of just being nice about it, I'm going to kill myself off first. So I'll be the one who passes away, right? And so if that happens, you know, both of us have spouses in the mix. And so immediately my shares of the business wind up going to my spouse. You don't necessarily want to be in business with my spouse. But since we do have that arrangement in place, she is contractually bound to sell those shares to you. But the policy that you had in place on me now gives you the funds to go ahead and purchase said shares from my spouse. So it winds up being a clean agreement. It's already agreed upon. My spouse is already taken care of with, you know, getting the value out of the business. And you now own 100% of the shares.
So it's a win-win.
Win-win. It's pretty clean. And it's pretty clean, you know, especially if it's only two partners. It could get a little bit sticky if there's more than two partners, because now I own one on you, I own one on the other partner, now the other people. So now we're talking about multiple different policies back and forth. So the other way that you wind up doing that, or variations of this, would wind up being what they call a entity redemption or the stock purchase plan. And so with that, you know, let's just say that the company itself, now if we have three owners, the company itself winds up owning a policy equivalent to about the valuation that each of the owners have on the company. And so once again, if I pass away, you and the other owner would wind up, you know, I guess the policy that the company owns on my life would wind up paying out tax-free to the company. And now the two of you are going to be the remaining 50-50 owners of the company itself, right? So my family gets taken care of. You two wind up being the remaining shareholders in the company, and it winds up being fairly clean.
Awesome. So when it comes to the type of life insurance options, what is the best types and how should you properly fund those buy-sell agreements?
So I think the biggest thing when you wind up looking at that type, think about, you know, the amount first, I guess. And term insurance or permanent insurance, there's like two general types of insurance, right? Term insurance is going to take care of the big what if, you know, if death does actually come to one of the owners, right? So that's the only triggering event that's really going to be taken care of. So it's one out of four possible events that wind up happening there. And, you know, the good thing about term is that it's very cost effective. So, and especially if you wind up thinking about if there's like a certain period of time until some owner is trying to get out of the business, right? So that may be something that you wind up looking at there. On the other side, you wind up having the permanent insurance. Now it's going to take care of the same kind of a thing. And you say, all right, well, maybe I have the permanent insurance that covers the death, but cash value, there is a cash value component that comes to permanent life insurance as well. So whether or not it's an index universal life, a universal life, a whole life, a variable, there's lots of different ways you can do it. But the idea there is that, you know, that cash value component, if you're looking for something else to help you out with, if it is like a cash value to pay out in the event of a retirement, or if it's a disability, or if a partner wants to leave, you know, maybe there's that cash value that you can use as part of a sinking fund to help you pay out for that kind of a thing. So, I mean, obviously there's considerations for each one of these, but, you know, figure, and it's not like you have to do one or the other. Maybe you wind up doing a combination of both of them. You know, you just kind of have to take whatever your strategy or what your consideration is. Think about what your age is, what your health looks like, what your partner's health is, what your partner's age are, what the company cash flow looks like, you know, what the resources are that you have, what you're trying to accomplish, I guess. And just understand too, that those premiums aren't necessarily deductible either, because you do wind up getting the benefit of the tax-free death benefit. So I guess there's not necessarily a right or wrong answer as far as like whether you do one or the other. Maybe it's a combination of both of those. I don't know. But I guess the whole idea would be start having those conversations.
Absolutely. And so just looking back at this whole conversation, what would be the best key takeaways for a business owner looking into succession planning and buy-sell agreements?
Sure. I guess when you wind up looking at succession planning, it's always going to be important as a small business owner, business owners in general. Many business owners create that business on the front end. You know, there's the excitement, I'm going to be growing, I'm going to be building. And they don't necessarily think through the backside of it. You know, at some point I might have to exit this business. I might want to get out of it and retire and not necessarily be there. So it's putting those steps in place to retire and, you know, get the value out of the business that you worked so hard for. And so it's, of course, the on your own fruition, you know, whether or not you retire or you exit out of the business, or if it is just, you know, unfortunately, if it's not up to you, right? So each company is going to be different and strategies aren't necessarily going to be the same. And when you continue to have these conversations with your business partners, if it's a growing company, like I said, that initial stage buy sell agreement that you first had is probably not going to look the same as it is now. So the valuations, that the thought process, I've had these conversations with business owners before where you're like, well, what did that buy sell agreement look like in that year one? And then where are you right now? And they haven't really thought through what that outstanding liability really looks like on paper. So you kind of run through some rough numbers on what the valuation or what they think the valuation of the business really would be. And, you know, maybe they put some policies in place 10 years ago that really aren't keeping up to what the value of the business is today. And so somehow, if they don't have that in place, they would have to come up with one of those other solutions, if it's cash on hand or sinking funds or, you know, installment agreements, what have you. So do the planning as soon as you can. And if, you know, if you're thinking through this strategy and you're saying, okay, life insurance might be something you want to incorporate, it doesn't hurt to do that while you're as young and healthy as you are today. It only gets more and more expensive the older and less healthy that you wind up getting. So I would say, if you haven't had this conversation, take some action, think through your succession plan. And if you do or you don't have a buy-sell agreement in place, you might want to review that. And if you don't have a business attorney, or go back to your business attorney who helped you out with those incorporation papers or what have you, and review that buy-sell agreement and make sure that it's up to date and it's the type of agreement that you want to have in place for today's business. So I would say, I mean, if you want to have a conversation around succession planning, buy-sell agreements, and see how this applies to you, Crystal and I are always available to have these kind of initial conversations and see where it goes from there.
Yeah. So Aaron, if they wanted to get a hold of you, what's the best way to reach out?
So the number here at the office is 858-487-3939. And if you want to email me, that would be aaron.wiegman@financialsense.com.
Yes. So if you wanted to reach out to me, you can use that same number, 858-487-3939, or you can email me at crystal.colbert@financialsense.com.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us here today. And hopefully we'll put some wise ideas into your head next month as well. Take care and we'll talk to you soon.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.